Gopher Legislative Advisory Board was created by Executive Order 2020-06. That order is publicly available on Governor Sununu's website. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the board and is open to the public and will be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91-A. Today's meeting is also being recorded, as we've just told you. Should you be a speaking participant and not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect now. The recording from today's meeting will be transcribed and posted to the Gopher webpage. My name is Jerry Little. I am Director of the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery, and I will be facilitating today's meeting. And because the meeting is being done by phone under RSA 91A, there are a few initial logistics that we need to establish. First, each of us must state our names, where we are located, and who is in the room with us. We're going to do that with this opening roll call. I am Jerry Little, Director of the Gopher Office in One Eagle Square in Concord. With me are Rhonda Hensley, Nancy Smith, Lisa English, and Steve Giovanelli. We are all staff people in the Gopher Office. Senate President Donna Soucy, are you with us?
Yes, this is Donna Soucy. I am at my home, and I am alone.
House Speaker Steve Shurtleff.
Steve Shurtleff, I'm at my residence in Penacook, and I am alone.
House Leader Dick Hinch.
This is Dick Hinch. I am at my office in Merrimack, and I am alone.
Chairman Lou D'Alessandro.
I'm Lou D'Alessandro. I'm in Manchester in my home, and I'm alone.
Chairwoman Mary Jane Wallner.
This is Mary Jane Wallner. I'm at my home in Concord, and I am alone.
Senator John Reagan. Senator Reagan. Representative Erin Hennessy.
This is Representative Erin Hennessy. I'm at my home in Littleton with my two minor children.
And we received, thank you, Representative Hennessy, and we received notice from Senator Morse shortly before the call telling us that he was not going to be able to join us today. As we move through our agenda today, each board member and anyone else speaking is asked to identify themselves before speaking. Should you choose to take any votes today, they must be done by roll call following the process we just used. And finally, before we begin today's presentations, please remember to use 5-star if you would like to ask a question. In addition, presenters are asked to also hit 5-star when their turn comes up, as that allows us to unmute your line. So before we start, I will ask one more time for Senator John Reagan, if you are with us. If not, maybe you need to hit 5-star to unmute your line. Not hearing response, and we'll move on. Last time we met was on Wednesday, June 3rd. There were a couple of items you asked that Gopher add to the agenda for discussion today, including the idea of stipends for employees at the New Hampshire Hospital, discussion of support for summer camps, and a follow-up on funding for emergency order number 48. And before we go to those items, we had a request from Representative Wallner, I believe, to provide an opportunity for Ken Robbins, President of the New Hampshire Camps Association, to do a presentation for us on the impact of coronavirus and COVID-19 on summer camps in the state. Are you with us, Mr. Robbins?
Yes, I am.
Very good. Thank you for joining us today and welcome. You've provided us with a handout which was provided to all members of the Legislative Advisory Board in advance. So if you would like to run through your presentation, please go right ahead.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to share thoughts about summer camps with you today. And you'll have to forgive me because talking to a group of legislators isn't what I normally do. I'm a camp director, and so usually I'm talking to campers and counselors in a dining hall or around a campfire. But I do appreciate you all taking the time to focus some attention on camps, which are in a real bind here as summer begins in just a few days. In addition to running a camp, as you mentioned, I serve as president of the New Hampshire Camp Directors Association. We represent the licensed youth recreation camp in the state. And there are about 160 licensed camps that operate every summer here in New Hampshire. Summer day camps, some are overnight or resident camps. There are camps that are organized as for-profit and others not-for-profit. There are camps affiliated with large organizations like the Y, and many others are independent. And many have been around for 80, 90, or over 100 years. And my camp is one of those. Camp Cabian in Alton Bay started in 1924. This would have been our 97th summer. In a normal year, spending this time with you on this day would be almost impossible. It's mid-June. We'd have 60 counselors and staff at camp by now, training and getting ready for opening day a week from Sunday, when about 120 campers would arrive and stay for the next couple of months. And we're a small camp. We're independent, we're not-for-profit, and this is the first summer since we began that we won't open. Like so many other camps throughout the state, we ran camps successfully during the Depression, through World War II, through a polio epidemic, and this year we're closed, and this is a pretty big deal. I think the role that camps play in New Hampshire is pretty well known. Summer camp really started in the Northeast. The first residential camp for girls was right up the road from me, Camp Quijonca. That's the first residential camp for girls in the country, and it closed over 30 years ago. And in fact, there were once, I think, six overnight camps within just a couple miles of Cabian, and today there are three. And where those camps were once, now there are houses on the shoreline. That's true throughout the state. Sustaining a summer camp was already a challenge before COVID. I shared with you some data that the American Camp Association collected in 2016, they found that camps hire roughly 300 full-time and 5,500 seasonal employees in New Hampshire every year, and camps contribute over $100 million to the state's economy. Now, in 2008, New Hampshire Camp Directors sponsored its own economic impact study. It's a little out of date, but the numbers haven't actually changed that much since then. And at the time, we found that camps serve almost 150,000 children every year. Nearly half of those are New Hampshire campers. About one in every three New Hampshire children over the age of five go to camp every year at a camp in New Hampshire. 37,000 New Hampshire families send their children to a New Hampshire camp. And camps are just a significant part of the network of care here in the state, and they are in real trouble. The state's guidelines for day and resident camps that came out just a couple of weeks ago are extraordinarily challenging. They're necessary, and they are prudent. Safety is every camp's first priority. But for many, in fact, for all of us, they present this real dilemma. For some camps, it's the degree to which following guidelines would mean changing the nature of their program. That was the case for my camp. For others, it's the cost of screening and testing, of modifying buildings, of doubling or even tripling healthcare staff. The cost of opening for the summer in some cases actually exceeds the cost of staying closed, and for some to the point of being unfeasible. Everyone's been wrestling with this for months, trying to find a path to open so they could do what they do, give campers the summer that they need and the summer they deserve after such a devastating winter and spring. So here's where we are. As of just a few days ago, almost half of the licensed day camps in the state are closed. Nearly all of the overnight camps are closed, my camp included. The most up-to-date number is that there are six resident camps still trying to open. And those camps that are still trying to open, a lot of them have pushed back their start dates to later in the summer. Most may be unable to serve as many campers as they normally do, or as many as want to attend. And I suspect beyond that, some of them may still end up closed. And for the campers that don't go to camp this summer, having already been home for months and out of school, they are hurting. Now, we did a quick survey of camps last week and got some rough numbers of what the impact of this summer will be on their operations. What we found was more than an 80% drop in gross revenue over 2019 numbers. And we think some of the revenue that camps who are closed are reporting there are going to be made up of deposits and tuition payments from this summer that their most dedicated families have offered to let them hold on to and carry over to next summer. So that's not even really income for this year. It's for next year, and it's modest. And while camps that are closed are doing what they can to manage their costs, many of those costs are fixed. We pay property taxes, utilities, seasonal maintenance, insurance, and some amount of payroll. So now, will camps survive this? Some will, and some are really in peril. 17% of the camps who responded to our survey said that they are either likely or somewhat likely not to be able to reopen next summer. Other camps are going to be relying on generosity of their families, who hopefully will return next summer, who might donate to fundraising campaigns or help in other ways. But we know, too, that there are costs that we don't yet clearly understand as well. We expect that COVID won't be a one-summer impact on camps. And camps are already working, whether they're open this summer or closed, they're already working on anticipating what they're going to have to change, what they're going to have to do differently next summer, and what the costs for that might be. And I think our most significant challenge is this: camps will not have the chance to recover lost 2020 revenue by having a strong third or fourth quarter of the year, as hopefully the economy begins to recover, the state continues to reopen. The next opportunity that summer camps will have to generate income is in the second quarter of 2021, April, May, June of next year. Between now and then, camps continue to have these significant fixed expenses that I mentioned before. Camps are going to struggle to survive all the way to next summer, and we know that some will not survive to next summer. I'm sure that you can hear it in my voice. Camp is in my blood. I've been at Cabian since I was 11 in 1985. It's an enormous part of who I am, and I imagine that's true for just about anyone who is fortunate enough to have had a camp experience as a child. It's a part of growing up, going to camp, and especially so here in New Hampshire. Anyone who's been to camp or has sent their children to camp or has worked at camp, they know how big of an impact spending one or several summers at camp has. Camps provide campers and counselors with social and emotional development. I don't think we've known a time when that was more important. Camps promote and develop essential qualities: environmental stewardship, good citizenship, self-reliance, independence, character, never more essential than today. Now, as things begin to get better and as we come out of this crisis, I believe that camps are the perfect organizations to lead the effort to help our children heal, help them relearn what it means to be a part of a community, and help them adjust to this difficult new normal, if you will. Camps aren't looking for a bailout. They're looking to stay strong and present so they can continue providing these critical services they've been delivering for a century, and in some cases more. We know that getting to 2021 is going to be a serious challenge for all camps, for all of us. So the help we seek is going to be put immediately to use, getting ready for next summer. That's what I have. I thank you, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Are there any questions for Ken Robbins? Representative Mary Jane Waller.
Thank you, Mr. Little, so thank you for having the camps do the presentation. I think it was helpful and gives us a lot to think about what will become of some of them. And I guess my question is for Mr. Robbins, and that is, what could the state of New Hampshire, especially through these fund that we have, what could we do for camp? I do know that camps, I believe, were not able to apply for the Main Street Relief Program. They were not able to apply to the nonprofit program, And I think the child care program was challenging because they had not been considered emergency child care providers. What exactly could this group look at for camps that might be helpful?
Thank you so much. I think that's an excellent question, and I think that you're exactly right that camps really didn't fit into any of the already formed programs, the Main Street Relief Fund, the child care program, unless they had qualified as an emergency child care provider. And I guess I'm not sure about qualification under the nonprofit fund. That one is still accepting applications. But I think what we are looking for is for the opportunity to have the same benefit as other organizations in the state have, which is assistance in moving past all of the various challenges, either being unable to open or having expenses that were directly tied to trying to open, but also, you know, recognizing that camps are a very different animal than most businesses in the state because of the way that revenue is generated, because of the timeline that it comes to camps in and the way that it is then spent throughout the year. Our ability to get through until next year, like I said, is severely hampered by having zero income years. My camp will not operate in any facet this summer. We don't anticipate any revenue, but yet we have on the order of $500,000 in fixed expenses that are going nowhere. So if it's in the form of grants, if it's in the form of help with some of those or relief from some of those fixed expenses, I think anything that takes some of the impact off of these, what is in essence a lost summer, will go a long ways towards ensuring that these camps are still here next summer.
Thank you. I appreciate that the answer.
Senator D'Alessandro, you have a question, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jerry. Jerry, my question to the director. The first question is, if you can't reopen, and what I'm gathering from what you're saying is many of these can't reopen, so the ability to gain any revenue has completely disappeared. Is that correct? They can't open under any circumstances.
Sir, thank you. For some camps, there is still a path to open, albeit at reduced capacity and in a manner that they are not necessarily familiar with. I think at this point, most camps have had to make that decision, either to forge ahead or to shut it down, because so much of the spring needs to be devoted to bringing seasonal systems online and whatnot. So in my case, and I know in quite a number of other camps' cases, right, they are doing nothing. Some camps are making an effort to operate in a very minimal fashion in some way for their alumni, bringing families to camp. But the challenges of operating as a residential camp with the facilities that camps have doesn't go away if it's not children. Those challenges still exist if it's adults or if it's families. There are differences, but the risks are still there. And I think because of summer camps' approach to safety and the priority that they put on the safety of their communities, that went a long way towards once seeing the guidelines and what it would take to ensure safety, towards camps saying this can't be done this year.
So thank you for that answer. So we have two basic categories. One, those that can't open up, and two, the ones that can open up but in a different manner. And when I looked at the numbers that you presented in the package of material that you sent, the payroll, $32 million, operating expenses, $88 million, capital expenses, $17 million, visitor spending, $7 million. The question is, in looking at both categories, in the category that they can't open, you'd be looking for some sustainability money, grants, whatever, to sustain them so that they could open up in the future. Because we don't want them to go out of business. I don't think you want them to go out of business. So if you look at the sustainability question, that falls into one category. And the operational costs for those that will operate in a different manner are in another category. And what kind of money are you looking for in each one of those categories?
Well, that's an excellent question, sir. And I'm afraid I don't have numbers per se. I think it would take a more significant dive into what each, you know, how each camp looks at their ability to sustain. You know, I think it's probably a safe generalization I don't want to make generalizations. I think that's something that we could easily enough generate by reaching out to our camps and having them break it out into those kinds of categories. What is the impact to your payroll, opening, not opening, or opening in a modified capacity? It's very different by camp, and I think that's what makes it challenging from our end, is that no two camps are alike. The way that they staff, the balance of seasonal versus year-round staffing, the type of property that they operate on, whether they are lakefront, whether they are inland. Camps aren't looking for a bailout. They understand that they are having to manage their costs in a way that they have never had to do before. What they are looking for is to avoid the scenario where either they cannot open next year or they are unable to open at the capacity that will be needed for next year. I really feel like camps, the need for camps is only going up as we emerge from this.
I don't think there's any question that your premise is correct. The mental health of the children who have been locked up really since March is problematic. Very, and those that needed a reprieve, a recreational opportunity, like a camping experience, I think is an essential point. And given the numbers that you have given, that's a tremendous number of people. So I wonder if you could, over a period, and Jerry can probably come up with the time frame, submit a request on both of those sides, the sustainability side and the operational, modified operational side, so that one would ascertain what you're looking for in terms of help in order to keep this going, because I do believe that it has an enormous impact on our state and certainly on our communities. I have grandchildren that go to these camps. These camps have been canceled, and the kids are very upset because they go there, they interact, they create friendships, they create relationships, and it's a real life experience for many of these kids, particularly when they've been almost cloistered for the last number of months. So if possible for you to do something like that, I think it would be helpful in terms of the decision-making process in terms of addressing your needs.
Thank you, sir. And we will do that as quickly as we possibly can, which should be quickly. And I thank you for, I think you put it as eloquently or more so than I could have, the need and importance of camps. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome, Senator. Thank you very much. We're going to go to Speaker Shirley at first, but just quickly, before I do that, Mr. Robbins, the Senator referenced a time period. The CARES Act limits use of funds that the Gopher is distributing to the period March 1 through December 30, 2020. Any impacts of the coronavirus on your operation from March 1st to December 30, 2020? Speaker Shurtleff.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Mr. Robbins. It was a wonderful presentation, and I'm a proud farmer alumni of both Camp Fatima and Camp Carpenter, and have farm memories of both of those camps. I wondered, first of all, two-part question, do you have any anticipation of how many either overnight or day camps might not be able to survive this pandemic and come back next year?
You're asking actual numbers, not percentage.
Okay.
I think, when we surveyed our, we sent our survey to all of the, you know, currently or formerly licensed camps in the state, and that's about 160. We heard back from 74 of them. And I'm grabbing that number right now. I believe the number that said it was likely that they would be unable to reopen, 4 camps, 9 somewhat likely. You know, I'm not sure how to extrapolate that to all 160 camps exactly. But I think about, the loss of one camp is tragic here in the state. As I mentioned before, 3 camps in the town of Alton all closed in the 1980s. And I know, having spoken to folks in Alton now, they recognize that tragedy, and it's now written, you know, it's part of the Alton town plan to preserve these spaces, because of the value that they have, not just to the town and having green space,
sure,
but opportunity. And so one camp lost is tragic. The possibility,
yeah,
that I'm hearing here that 13 out of 74 are saying there's a possibility that we don't open this year, we're done forever. That's terrifying and heartbreaking.
Yeah. And the second part of my question, have you heard of any other state that was able to come up with a program to provide relief to the day camps and overnight camps?
That's a great question. I have not. I will say that I haven't gone looking for that information, but I sure will.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Robbins? I don't see or hear any. With that, I want to just turn to Lisa English on the Gopher staff. She's been doing a little research about some of the questions Mr. Robbins raised. Lisa?
Thank you, Director, and members of the committee of the board. I just wanted to clarify, summer camps that are for-profit were eligible to apply for the Main Street Relief Fund, and similarly, nonprofit summer camps that being a summer camp does not exclude you from eligibility for the New Hampshire Nonprofit Emergency Relief Fund, and applications for that process are open until June 25th, so I encourage any eligible nonprofit to apply for that program.
Any questions for Lisa? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Robbins, for joining us and for the wonderful presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
We will move on with our agenda to discuss items that were raised during the last meeting. The first item on our agenda is a stipend program for workers at the New Hampshire State Hospital. Shortly after the last Legislative Advisory Board meeting ended, we did an outreach over to Commissioner Chivinet at the Department of Health and Human Services, and in fact, she was in the process of putting finishing touches on a request direct to the governor's office to see whether or not stipends would be extended to all employees at the New Hampshire Hospital. We have not heard an official response to that request. At this point in time, the indication is that that is probably unlikely, but we don't have an official thumbs up or thumbs down on that. Any questions about that particular issue? Seeing none, the next issue on the agenda is follow-up on, I'm sorry, Representative Wong, do you have a question about the New Hampshire Hospital Stipend Program? Do you have a question, Representative Wong? Maybe five-star on mute?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I'm sorry. Am I muted? I don't think so.
No, you go right ahead, Representative Wallner. We can hear you.
Thank you. I wondered what you thought the timing was in finding out about whether or not the employees at New Hampshire Hospital would be included in the stipend program.
I honestly, from here on this side of Main Street, have no idea what that timing might be. That's a governor's office decision.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Okay, we'll move on to the next item, which is follow-up on emergency order number 48. Emergency order, what was that executive order? I have just emergency order 48 had to do with guidance on providing IEPs for students during the era of remote learning and other issues. We reached out to Commissioner Edelblue immediately following the last LEAB meeting, and he responded with a note that his department had, shortly before we had our last call, report purchased $1 million of state-level activity funds specifically to assist with that work. And in addition, either that day of our last meeting or momentarily after that, $33.9 million of CARES Act funds were passed along to schools and may be used to meet the requirements of Emergency Order 48. Any questions about that item on the agenda? Seeing or hearing none, I will move on to the next item, which is self-employed individuals and the Main Street Relief Fund. As you probably know, the governor announced the initial results of the application phase of the Main Street Relief Fund yesterday afternoon during his press conference at 3 o'clock. He also, during his press conference at 3 o'clock, said that it had certainly come to his attention that there were a significant number of applicants to the Main Street Relief Fund that did not qualify because they were either self-employed or sole proprietors, and that he plans to work on another program, whether it's going to be Main Street Relief Fund 2.0, or something entirely different, we are unaware, but that he will be proposing a program to provide some sort of additional support to self-employed and sole proprietor businesses. I would simply follow that with sort of the state statement that one of the very first things that was done through this entire effort that's now being run by Gopher, and I think it actually happened before Gopher was officially created, was extension of unemployment benefits for self-employed individuals, which also made them eligible to collect the additional $600 a week from the federal government. And the position had been all along that it was self-employed individuals received assistance in that manner prior to any other sector of the business community. Nonetheless, the governor is looking at a follow-on program to address their needs. So you have questions from Representative Aaron Hennessy.
Thank you, Director Little. Thank you for adding this to the agenda, and I'm really happy that the governor has agreed to extend funds for the self-employed individuals. The main reason why I wanted this added to the agenda is for those self-employed individuals that are, they're not the ones working from home as a travel agent or a consultant. They're the ones that have a brick and mortar type of establishment on a main street, as we do here in Littleton, where they have overhead costs of rent and leased equipment that they have to pay in addition to their home expenses that unemployment insurance doesn't cover. So I'm happy to see that these individuals will be getting some relief. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Representative Hennessy. Senator D'Alessandro, you have a question, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Little. What I've received a number of calls from constituents who were sole proprietors, and they believed that they were sort of misled in terms of the availability to get something from that Main Street money. So I'm glad that's going to be re-looked at. These people, these sole proprietorships, certainly are in the same. They're in the same situation as other businesses are. So I think clarity in the fact that these people will be given an opportunity should be brought out by somebody. And I'm not sure the governor was quite clear in terms of that. I got a call this morning from one of my constituents who was in that category, who was in the process of writing a letter to the governor. And I said, well, wait, because I think the governor has come out with some new thoughts with regard to this situation. So if those could get out to people, I think that would be extremely, extremely helpful. This is an area that was not clearly understood, obviously.
Thank you. Further questions regarding self-employed individuals and support from the state? Seeing none, that is the full list of the prepared agenda items. Are there any other items that anyone would like to raise while we're here? Representative Mary Jane Wallner.
Thank you, Mr. Little. I had a call yesterday from an area agency. I think we had a presentation by them in one of our meetings, and I wondered under what category could they apply for assistance. There seemed to be some misunderstanding about what they were or were not eligible for under. I mean, probably not the Main Street Relief and not the child care. I'm not sure about the nonprofits, but there were some questions about whether or not they were going to be eligible for any assistance.
So, Representative Wallner, that's an issue we'll probably have to look into before we try to opine on that. If you could give us any detail about what particular service the area agency is delivering, it might help us determine which of the programs they would fit into.
Okay. Do you want me to forward that information to you.
That would be good. My understanding is that area agencies can deliver a spectrum of services, and
I think you're correct.
So I think it would help us to know what the services are they're providing to their community before we could really steer them in any particular direction.
Okay. These are the agencies that work with resident people in our state who have developmental disabilities. So remember we had a presentation by them, and they talked about in the North Country where the area agency did not receive the PPP grant from the federal government, and that they were facing a real shortage for payroll. We had a presentation by them, and I will follow up with more information.
So these are, we're not talking residential facilities. These are organizations that are providing in-home care.
It's a mix of things.
I don't want to be held to this, but it looks as though possibly they fit within the definition of long-term care. But again, I think we need more details before we could give you a solid answer that we'd want to stand behind.
Okay, I will.
People shouldn't be waiting, however, because the deadlines for applying to many of these programs are rolling along.
Right. I think that's why they called me.
So Nancy Smith, our general counsel, is with us, and she's been looking something up while we're chatting here. What do you have, Nancy?
So Representative Wallner, the definition that has been given to long-term care as to who is eligible are residential skilled nursing facilities, assisted living facilities, home health care agencies, and other congregate residential living facilities that provide health care services to the elderly that are licensed by DHHS under RSA 151. And regulated by a series of New Hampshire administrative rules that include HEP 803, 804, 805, 809, 822, 823, and 824. So if they are licensed under 151 and regulated under any of those administrative rules, they should qualify. That is in the FAQ on our website.
Thank you. I think probably one of the issues there, I mean, there are a lot of technicalities about what you just read, but one of the issues may be that their clients are not all elderly. I think their clients are a range of age, adults, but not necessarily older adults. I will forward you their concerns.
Good. Lisa?
I just want to emphasize the fact that the long-term care provider out of the Healthcare System Relief Fund, the deadline for those applications is on June 19th, which is in 2 days. So I just urge folks to take a look at the Gopher page. That gives you access to the application link. And you should also be able to find an email, which I'll give you very quickly here, for the long-term care provider application. It's ltcreliefund@dhhs.nh.gov.
Thank you. That was Lisa English. Thank you, Lisa. Any further questions, Representative Waller, or are you all set?
No, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Very good. Senator D'Alessandro, do you have a question, sir?
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. We, in the process of our discussions, we talked about dollars for the university system and the community colleges, and both have announced that they will be reopening. And when I look at the criteria for how money could be spent, I'm looking at testing students, faculty, and staff, isolation care, enhancing online and remote learning, and modifications necessary for on-campus social distancing. I think with the decision by the systems to come on, to come back with the opening of the campuses, we should relook at the money that we gave them. That's a very costly situation to prepare for the reopening. And we want the reopening because it's a vital part of our, A, of the educational experience and the economy of New Hampshire. I would hope that we'd take another look at further helping the publics. We did a great deal for the privates. I think the governor should be commended for the $10 million he gave to the privates. They certainly needed it. But I think the publics need a little bit more, particularly the University Keene and Plymouth, which are going to reopen, and they're going to have on-campus learning. And preparing for that is an expensive situation. So I would hope that we'd look at that in our next meeting. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. So I'll write that note down that you would like that discussed at your next meeting, which, unless there are other questions or comments, or anything else that somebody would like to raise, a different topic. And we're at the point where we discuss when you would like your next meeting to be.
Well, that's a good question, Jerry, particularly where Senator Morse is not on board. Did Senator Reagan come on board?
I do not see him listed on our board. If you're with us, Senator Reagan, and calling in from another line, you might hit 5-star, which will notify us what line you are on. But I do not believe that Senator Reagan was able to join us. I can see that I have a question now from Representative Hinch.
I would think we should meet on Friday. The items that we talked about today are very important. And we should be addressing them. So my thought would be we meet Friday at 1, unless there's a significant problem by the chairman of our group, Senator Morse. I don't know why he isn't on today, but obviously it had to be important. Otherwise, he wouldn't have missed his night. So I think we've got to keep going on these things. We can't let them slide.
Comments?
Well, I would agree that there is a bit of urgency. I think we just need to check in with Senator Moore, Senator Reagan, on their availability as well.
Will do. Okay. Representative Hinch, do you have a question, sir?
Yeah, I was going to thank you. I was going to also say I think we, before we set a date, we should check with Senator Moore and Senator Reagan. I do have a conflict on Friday, so I was going to make a suggestion of something like next Wednesday. Again, I think it's prudent to have Senator Morse as the chairman ping in on this. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any further questions or comments? Senator D'Alessandro, are you amenable to the idea of next Wednesday?
I'm sorry. Am I off mute?
Yeah, well, we can hear
you. You can hear me?
Yes.
I'm amenable to anything that the group is amenable to. I just think that we're in a period where these things are needed, and our ability to deal with these things efficiently and effectively is a preeminent situation. But I agree totally. We want everybody in on the discussions. It's important for Senator Morse. It's important for Senator Reagan and Representative Hinch. I mean, it's important. But we made a commitment to be on this committee so that we could serve the public. And we've got to serve the public. We're getting calls all the time from people who either have ambivalence about what's been stated, who have questions about how they can do certain things. So, I mean, it's we have to do what we have to do. That's all I'm saying. I think we've got to do it. Look at we've had a tough legislative session. We don't meet. The legislature doesn't meet. We're doing everything virtually. We're putting a lot of pressure on the public, And we need to be responsive to public needs at this time. We have $1.25 billion that must be given out and must be spent by the 30th of December. And indeed, it's our responsibility to give advice to the governor and get his consent to get this money spent properly where it does the most good for the people of the state of New Hampshire. That's all I want, and any time we can get together to do that, I'm amenable to doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any further questions or comments? Then if I understand your direction to me correctly, you would like me to reach out to Senator Morris as chairman of this group and figure out which date he might prefer for your next meeting, whether it is day after tomorrow, Friday, or a week from today, next Wednesday, and I will work with him to set up your next date. When that happens, the issues you would like to talk about are additional monies for the University System of New Hampshire and the Community College System of New Hampshire. And is there a second issue? Any other issues you want on that agenda?
I think the campers were going to get back to us with their needs, what their requests were. And I think you were going to look into the Mary Jane situation. And you were also going to get back to us about the New Hampshire hospital stipend. Those were the items that I got it down.
Very good. We'll do our best to have a response to you about whether or not there's going to be a stipend for New Hampshire hospital. Officially, an answer from that. But as I mentioned, what I understand is it's not likely. Representative Walner, you're... Hand is up, ma'am. Representative Walner, maybe 5-star to unmute. Yes, Representative Walner. You may be on mute, Representative Waller. You've raised your hands. 5-star.
Sorry.
Five-star.
For some reason, I should keep hitting 5-star, and I unmute myself or mute myself. I just want to go back to the area agencies and maybe have a little more discussion about that. I will try to get more information about what the issues are there. But I do know we had a presentation by them, and they seem to have had a number of issues facing them, and I wanted to try to figure out where, if they can't be included in the long-term care funding, where could they be included? And I know time is running out here, so the sooner we can have that discussion, the better.
I think Lisa English has some additional information for you.
I do. Thank you. I had the opportunity. I heard from HHS over the last couple of minutes. Area agencies generally would not fall under the long-term care health care fund. Home health agencies are, and those are those licensed under the provisions that Nancy mentioned. So that means the area agencies would fall under the general health care system relief fund and not the long-term care fund. So this is obviously something we will continue to look into, but I just wanted to clarify that since I heard that from HHS so quickly.
Thank you. That's good to know. And do you know when the general health care deadline is?
So I think for supplement. So let me see what kinds of information or what other additional healthcare system relief fund opportunities there will be. So we'll continue to look into it. But right now, the deadline that exists is the long-term care fund. So not directly responsive to your question, but let me see if I can find out any additional information.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments? I don't see any. You all know how to reach us. If you do have anything that you would want to add to the agenda for the next meeting, which we will check with Committee Chairman Senator Morse on to see if either is this coming Friday at 1 o'clock or a week from today, next Wednesday, works for him and Senator Reagan. Senator Shurtleff, had you asked us, Speaker Sir Shurtleff.
Fine. Kind of insult to the Senate, but Jerry, I thought I sent you and Rhonda an email last week, but being IT challenged, there's no telling where it might have gone. But I mentioned I received a wonderful email from Dick Ober at New Hampshire Charities about the work that the governor's nonprofit emergency fund that Dick, along with the representatives of CDFA and the New Hampshire nonprofits, the Center for New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits, is administrating, and I wondered if we could have them join us at one of our meetings to talk about what the work they're doing with nonprofits.
Certainly, we can do that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll try to arrange that for the next meeting. And I think that's about it. I don't see any other hands going up. So I'll give you one last 10-second opportunity to raise your hand and let us know if there's anything else you'd like to discuss or have added to the agenda. And as soon as we're done here, I'll reach out to Senator Morse to find out about whether he would prefer this Friday or next Wednesday. All right, well, seeing no hands going up, we will call this meeting of the Legislative Advisory Board to a close at 1:59 p.m. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.